Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be here tonight with Jen Colmore from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Michael. Nice to be here.
Great to have
Again.
You there. It's fun to have, for me to have this kind of regular connection with you and the other people who are involved with Living Compassion.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a treat for us to get to check in, too.
Yes. Jen, I understand we're going to be talking a little bit today about the Living Compassion Board.
I think that's true. And I had one super quick piece of good news from Africa, if I can slide it in.
Oh, please.
Which is that I just got an email from Teresa today. For people who are following the NGO saga, we got our NGO papers officially.
Now, are you telling me that you have the final
version?
We have
the final in hand.
Wow, that's very exciting.
Yeah, so it's very fun. It's one of those things where when we started out, we thought, yeah, this won't be any big deal. You know, this will just be a little formality. And 2 years later, we feel like it's one of the biggest accomplishments we've made.
Wow, that's great.
Anyway, it's fun to have it behind us.
Uh-huh. And is there anything that changes as a result of that?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
Not really, except that things like – that's not true. I guess there are things like, you know, we can – come into the country sort of more with ease. We've been, when we come into the country now, we say things like we're visiting, and so now that we have our official papers, we can say we're an NGO, we're here to do our work, and I think we can do things like, you know, not have to pay tax on the things that we're buying, which is very significant there.
A lot of
tax on things can be huge. So there will be benefits, but it's just, we had to do it. It's a formality of working there. And so it's just so nice that it's no longer a detail we're going to have to attend to when we're there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what the Living Compassion Board does.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was thinking about it today, and so often people will come to the monastery or come to an event that Living Compassion does and say, my gosh, you know, how do, you know, such a small number of people do all of this? And it's true, even with the board, it's a small number of people. But there are quite a number of people who are on the Living Compassion Board and are kind of behind the scenes really helping to make everything that happens in Living Compassion happen. And it's a really fun process for all of us to do that. The folks who are on the board are people who have been practicing for many, many, many years. And that's why they're on the board, because they're people who want to make you know, Living Compassion a central part of their lives. So everything that we do, like I'm just thinking about the things that are on the docket for us right now, the One Thing campaign that people have probably heard about that is being launched very soon, the Bridge Walk, all the Save the Dates emails that come out, the Peace Storming event that's happening right before the Bridge Walk, and in a minute we can say a little bit more about each of these, even the Voices cartoons. All of those things that come out, all the events we put on, all the publications we put out, all the emails we send, all of that is generated from the board. It's all put out through the board.
Uh-huh.
Which,
so the Bridge Walk, the Peace Storming, the emails, the board is involved with generating that and helping that those processes to happen.
Yeah, and from the very start, you know, the way, I mean, I think about something like the One Thing campaign, which is going to be huge. You know, the way that started was sitting together in a room, someone had an idea, Sherry, I think, in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is someone has an idea, and then the energy of the board, you know, everyone contributes to it and adds to it, and it grows, and all the different perspectives that people have and the willingness that people have to work on things. You know, most folks on the board are not people that are getting paid for any of the work that they're doing.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know firsthand because you participate in that, what an amazing experience it is to have everyone sitting in the room together and collaborating and creating these things. And then 2 years down the road, it's a major project.
Yes. So somebody or some people come up with an idea, and then the board all gets behind it and contributes ideas and suggestions, and there's a lot of energy that's generated as a result of that.
Yeah. And then the board also serves as, you know, a test group for all the emails. So before an email ever reaches inboxes and, you know, for the general folks, it's gone through a detailed process of everyone on the board looking at it, giving feedback, you know, things like the Voices cartoon. So there's one monk who, you know, draws them and actually does the work for it, but everyone's contributing for ideas and giving feedback on, you know, I didn't quite get that part of it. What about this? And by the time it actually goes out, it's gone through, you know, the whole board has participated in making it, you know, just exactly how we want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what's coming up for me as you're talking is what can be accomplished when egocentricity is not part of the process.
It's so true. And it's in that way, it's quite a, I don't know, it's such a good practice ground for everyone who's on the board because, you know, when we're on retreat at the monastery, let's say, we hold what we call the privileged environment. So we create a space that's safe and conducive to do practice. And
yes.
A lot of that is that we're not having verbal interactions, we're not socializing with each other, things like that. And when the board is doing business, of course, a lot of it requires communication, even, you know, a lot of email communication, but even verbal communication. So
yeah.
Let's say we're setting up for an event, you know, we need to communicate with each other. But the spirit of the privileged environment is held throughout that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not about making friendships and being buddies. And, I mean, it's very, very fun. And certainly for me, I feel in many ways as close to the folks in Living Compassion and everyone that we practice with as I do to anyone in the whole world. But it's not personal. You know, it's
yeah.
not about me. It's not about my personality and somebody else's personality.
Yes. Yes. It's quite amazing to me as well. I think for me, coming from conditioning, there's a belief that I couldn't get that kind of closeness without that sort of social talking, quote, getting to know people. And yet, it's my experience from practice that I feel much closer to people without
yeah.
ever talking to them or wanting to socialize with them.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and in a way, we can see that spilling over into our relationships with everyone in our lives.
Yes.
You know, there's a way that we can bring the spirit of that into every relationship we have, and it's certainly, in my experience, carried throughout the work of the board, which is so important because what the board is doing is representing practice
yes.
for Sangha. And,
yes.
you know, putting out, it's important to us that everything we put out into the world represents us in the way that we want to be represented. I know, you know, Dave was on a few weeks ago talking about communication, and it's really the same issue that in the way that the board is, the way that the board interacts and the way that it works and the structures that it follows, it's important to us that that matches the integrity of practice. Of what we want to be offering out to the world.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, a couple of things come up for me as you say that. One is that Gandhi quote of be who you
yeah.
want the world to be.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's apparent to me is that the behind-the-scenes work of the board and of the monastery models what happens when we're out, quote, in public,
uh-huh.
when there is a big event, when the retreat's going on.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, yep. And one of the things that I think is so great about the board is that we prioritize fun.
Yes.
You know, it's not, sometimes people have an image of spiritual practice as being grim and boring and awful, and yet we make a conscious decision to have fun be part of what we do, you know, that
yes.
in the work that we're doing, it's creative, it's inspiring, it's fulfilling.
Really, it is a lot of fun for me. And also to create that special time for having fun in a conscious way is great, too.
Yeah, it is. It's another nice modeling for each other, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's wonderful.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so we spend, all things put together, we spend a fair amount of time together. We have weekly meetings on the phone. We get together in person as often as we can. We try to do it once a month. That doesn't always happen, but... you know, for a whole day of going through an agenda of things that we're looking at events that are coming up, brainstorming new ideas, you know, assisting with, say, something like the new practice opportunity that's coming up.
Yeah.
And then we also do weekly Best Year Yet calls where
yeah.
we have Living Compassion itself has a Best Year Yet plan, and the board is what carries that plan out throughout the year.
Yes, yes. To me, it's that that participation that really is, you know, exciting and energizing about the work of the board.
Yeah, it really is.
Wonderful.
Experience.
Jen, thanks so much for joining us again here today.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good show.
Okay, we will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I was listening in. That was very fun.
Good.
Yeah, I really like that distinction that you folks were making. That idea that we have in society that we get to know one another by socializing, by chatting, by, you know, kind of sharing stories and that sort of thing. And the experience that we have in practice where we rarely do that. I mean, if we're in retreats together, of course, we learn things about one another's lives, but we don't do that. We just don't sit around and talk about ourselves in that way. And what makes that such an intimate experience, I think, is that rather than learning things about one another, so here I am, I'm being a personality, you're being a personality, and you're telling me something about yourself, and of course my conditioning is over there going, geez, I can't believe he thinks that. I mean, what kind of a moronic attitude is that to, you know, and this is what we're doing to get to know one another and feel close to one another. But what we do in practice, of course, is simply do our best to be as centered as we can, to choose conscious, compassionate awareness in everything that we say and do. And so what we see of one another is the very best of us. And so I see you showing up, you know, day after day, week after week, whatever it is, in this sincere, kind, caring way, being somebody who's trying to be as conscious as possible, who's choosing compassion as much as he can. What's not to like? You know, it's just a superior way to get to know people, because what do I care, really, what kind of conditioning you have? Now, if I know something about what happened to you in terms of conditioning, then it would probably evoke sympathy in me. But listening to you get identified, or you listening to me get identified with some aspect of the personality, and then, you know, spouting opinions and that sort of thing, that's not who we are. So why, it's kind of like getting to know one another by sitting down and watching TV together.
Yes.
You know, it just doesn't really have anything to do with who we are. So I like that point that y'all were making.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that socializing is kind of a backward way, almost seems like, to get to know people.
Right. You learn to care about one another in spite of conditioning.
Yeah.
And it's just not the most effective way. So,
Sherry, I have a stack of callers here from Pennsylvania.
Oh, gosh. That hotbed of awareness practice. That's very fun.
Yes. Okay.
Who are they? Let's hear from those people.
Let's hear from them. Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi,
Sherry. How you doing? Hi. What's going on in Pennsylvania, in your part of Pennsylvania?
Well, we did the rummage sale, rummage sale number 4.
Oh, excellent. To benefit.
Yes.
The work in Zambia.
Yes. Yes.
Lovely.
So it makes it much more tasty to listen to the reports because, and it was quite a ride. It was really quite a ride. Some amazingly beautiful things happened. People responded to the flyer not in expected ways.
Uh-huh.
And it was good.
All right.
Yeah,
it sounds like there are many intriguing stories behind that little synopsis.
Well, you know, I have to say that the most beautiful thing for me was just the sense of gratitude for these people for showing up. You know,
uh-huh.
Barb came and spent like 9 hours, and my friend
uh-huh.
Marcia from up in Chautauqua stayed with me the entire weekend. And we put in like, you know, 12-hour days, and it's like having this thing that you can spend yourself on.
Uh-huh.
And just finding, you know, this is what's next, and this is what's next, and this is what's next. And this person didn't show up, but that's okay. And the work is all done. I made the last trip today to donate the stuff to Construction Junction, who, you know, really does a lot for recycling in the community and, you know, is a really good source for Pittsburgh. So, you know, just like, and, you know, just the willingness of people. Misty drove from Murrysville twice. She packed up all the books and, you know, just you know, it was a big...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again,
so
you get to see the very best of people, don't you?
Yes, and the very worst. And I liked what you were saying about loving people through the conditioning
uh-huh.
and running into people's conditioning. And, you know, it's like, and having to let go of the dream and
uh-huh.
just take whatever shows up. Because, you know, and kind of hearing the voices of, well, you know, you did set the intention for this much and you only made this much. And, you
uh-huh.
know, it could have been so much better and, you know. And then, but also just kind of like seeing that, you know, people are caught in their conditioning and it's not personal. And operating from a place of, you know, well, can we see what happens?
Yeah. And the keeping the awareness in the front of our consciousness that for all of us, when we're disidentified, we tend to be lovely and charming. And when we are identified with egocentric karmic conditioning, not so much.
Yes, Legion is my name. All
yeah.
the different ways that conditioning comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then finding the postscript with it's like when I spend myself, there's nothing of me left to get tired or worn out or, you know, but, you know, it's like, and then coming back into conditioning, you know, just seeing how I don't take care of myself.
Uh-huh. When you're in conditioning.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah, because when we're centered, I mean, we can do something like mm-hmm. that forever and
yeah.
not get tired, because so much of what makes us tired, the way we talk about it usually, is liking and disliking. So what wears us out is that conversation inside our minds about this and that and why are they and what about that and I don't like that and I don't feel like that and I want that. And that's what wears us out. So when we're just here, a body and mind and focused in the present,
mm-hmm.
Tired doesn't happen,
exactly. Yes. So I know that you have a whole stack of callers, but it was, and it's like what Jen was talking about with fun. It's just kind of like when you let go and get out of the way, then fun is just one of the byproducts. It's the kind of one
yes.
of the fruits of the spirit.
Yes.
And it's like when we were seeking fun, you know, when I wanted the rummage sale to be this big, glorious thing, that was
uh-huh.
kind of the seeking of the fun. And, you know, it just, there was so much misery there.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
just letting go and letting the rummage sale be what it is. Then there's real gratitude.
Yeah, and it's fun. Because being present
fun.
Is fun. It doesn't matter what we're present to. So, the rummage sale could be a total bomb. Everybody brings all their stuff, and then 2 days later, gather it all up and take it somewhere and dump it. But if we're present,
yeah.
then that's what we've got, and it's a good time.
Yeah, and when I left the door, you know, there was clear, empty, receptive space.
Uh-huh.
And still there's this gratitude. And I'll be sending off a check by the end of the week. The one thing that went really well was the raffle, and I'm actually still running it. this week. I'm going to draw on Saturday. And that's been very, it's been delightful just seeing how the ones add up.
And it's an annual event, right?
Well, it's a heck of a lot of work.
So yes, it is.
Yes, but a fundraiser is an annual event. I'm kind of already finding that there are seeds for the next one, maybe around December.
You know,
form it's going to take.
What?
I don't
you
know
don't
what
know?
Form it's going to take.
When you said it's a heck of a lot of work, when Jen and I were in Cantalomba a couple of weeks ago, somebody had, as if you read the blog, I think this is out in the blog, a couple of the retreatants had purchased some giant cooking pots for the women. And now these women are strong. Unbelievably strong. And we stood there and watched them. They have these spoons are like, they're like giant paddles. You know, we can say wooden cooking spoons, but that makes you think it's something you would find in your kitchen. And it's definitely not. It's more like something you would find in a workshop, okay? Because so here are these pots that are probably 3 feet across and 2 feet deep, and they're filled with the closest for us would be like grits or polenta, but not more like risotto, okay? And these women are stirring these giant pots of this stuff. So, and of course, they're feeding over 300 kids with these giant pots of this stuff. And now I'm fairly fit. And I looked at that and I thought,
I bet
I could not make one turn around that pot with that giant paddle. So it always, you know, when I think about how hard we work, I like to keep those kinds of images.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Pray to the hard work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
thank you,
Sherry.
Thank you too for doing that and letting your hard work support their hard work and make that nice
and
connection.
And the women stirring the pots in Africa.
That's right. Yeah.
Sending a little pile of money.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Beth. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Amy from Philadelphia.
Hey. How are you?
Hi, how are you? I don't know. I'm not sure how I am. I'm calling because I've got a lot going on that I kind of wanted to process with you if I could.
Sure.
Last time I talked to you was at the Pittsburgh retreat a couple months ago, and you had recommended that I go to the monastery. So
one of those get thee to a nunnery sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So I contacted them, and hopefully I'm going to work something out to get out there because I just decided that the time has come that I just can't seem to function out here with my conditioning, and so now I've been sort of having a lot of kind of backlash for my decision to write this letter, and I've been struggling with that because the person who wrote this letter was someone who came in and was very frantic to help Amy, and who doesn't necessarily come along very often to take action and make decisions. And so then after I wrote this letter, I felt like, oh my gosh, I sounded like such a conditioned lunatic. And then so since then, I've been struggling with all that the voices are telling me, how I'm impacting people at the monastery and all these projections that I have. And I'm having a hard time trying to figure out exactly what it is I'm trying to say, but
May I jump in and ask you?
Sure.
Okay. So previously, it sounds like the voices had a lot to say about who you were and how you needed to be and how you weren't and all of that.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that you've decided that you're going to do something rather significant about it, then suddenly the shift is to what a difficulty you're going to be for these other people. So it's not okay that you live your life where you are and that you're allowed to be happy. That's not going to happen, right?
Right.
But then when you try to do something about it, so it's like, this is not okay. How you are is not okay. Your life is not okay. What's going on is not okay. Okay, you're right. So I'm going to do something. No, you can't do that. And here's the reason that you can't do that. You can't do that because of all these people out there and what you're going to... Is that kind of it?
Yeah. And what happened was I felt this... my idea was to try to attend the retreat that's starting tomorrow. And so I filled out the form to register and all of that, and then it got to the payment part, and then I discovered that I couldn't actually afford it after I had gone through all this process and had been in communication and everything. So now I feel like I just wasted everyone's time. And
let me ask you this.
Okay.
Did you tell anybody that before now?
I emailed them today.
Oh, good. And said, actually, I've realized I can't afford to do this.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they say.
Yeah.
So that very unhelpful voice that is always watching you and telling you who you are and who everybody else is and what everything means and what's going to happen next, it actually doesn't know what's going to happen next. It doesn't know you've wasted anybody's time. It doesn't know that money is an issue. It doesn't know what they'll say.
I guess what I'm experiencing is that even as I'm like every step I'm taking that I'm trying to do the right thing, I'm like the backlash is so great that...
Well, here's the thing, Amy, and I'm sure we've had this conversation before, so it will not come as a total surprise to you. That is self-hatred. It does not tell you the things that it tells you so that you will become a better person, so that you will have a better life, so that down the road you will be who you should be and be happy. It says those things to you because it is hateful. So, of course, I know when I say these things, I know it sounds preposterous, but you know it's true.
Uh-huh.
All those
voices
want is for you to be stuck and miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, there's going to be backlash. You know, if it weren't so horrible and terrifying, truly, the way to go through life is when those voices are screaming and crazed, you know you're going in the right direction.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Today's quote in the Transform Your Life book, I think, was if you're in hell, keep going, or something,
yes.
something like that.
Yes. Good old Winston Churchill,
that's sort of where I feel like I'm at right now.
That's right. But that's a perfect image, because as you know, the voices will get you out in the middle of hell, and then they'll tell you you can't go back and you can't go forward. And then they just beat you and beat you and beat you for being in hell.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's a sick system. There's just no question about it. But the good news is we didn't make it up. Okay? So it's not personal. Everybody has it. Everybody has this going on. People will say, "Oh no, I don't have those voices," or, you know, "No, I don't think so." And I can promise you, all that's going on with them is they haven't paid close enough attention, number one, and number two, they haven't tried to do anything that egocentric karmic conditioning didn't want them to do. Because as soon as you try to take a step in a direction that's actually going to be good for you, that's going to be helpful, that's going to make a difference in your life, they're going to go nuts.
And that's sort of what's been happening.
Yes, of course. But now another good news point, it's not like they were a cheery, happy lot before you made this choice.
No.
No. It's just that they were torturing you in ways that really worked for them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I know.
So now I'm also sort of in the position where I feel like if it works out that I am able to go to the monastery, I feel like there's a ton of things that I need to do beforehand, and those are seeming more and more difficult things to do. All of a sudden, I feel like I can't even do a load of laundry.
Now, let me ask you this. What made you think it's going to be any different at the monastery?
Well, that's the thing. I'm terrified to go to the monastery, to be honest. Because I've been there, I know kind of what I'm getting myself into.
Okay.
So you're
aware that
the voices.
Go ahead.
The voices are going to follow me. I know.
Oh yes, they are. Yeah. Yeah. So shall I give you my encouragement for what needs to be done before you leave?
Okay.
Close the door.
Close the door.
As you're leaving your abode, close the door behind you. Because here's the thing about it. One of these days, every single one of us, one minute we're going to be here, and the next minute we're going to be gone. And what we were able, the list that we had to take care of before we left, is not going to be completed. And whatever we leave will be an issue for whomever for really a very short period of time. And then it'll be done. And the sooner we begin to live our lives with that awareness, the better off we're going to be. Because a huge way, as you know, that those voices keep control is that you need to do something, but you can't do that. So you need to do something about your life.
Okay.
Now, this is the list of things that you have to do, but it's too hard. It's too overwhelming. It's too much. So once again, where are you left? Well, you have to just stay where you are. And truly, at some time, you just have to say, I'm not playing that game anymore. I'm not doing it. Well, there are going to be awful consequences. Good. I'm sure there are. But the reality is there are awful consequences to what we're doing right now.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my encouragement, and I realize I have a slightly unorthodox approach to life. the fact that it's slightly, don't you like the emphasis on slightly? Slightly unorthodox doesn't mean that it's incorrect.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I guess my plan is to just do the next thing on my list.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
And of course, you know, we do have some good we have some good little support systems and techniques. You know, you can move. You know how to move into a role of mentoring with that person who's so overwhelmed. You know, you can look at the list and help her decide. Okay, which one could we do now? All right. Well, all right. Let's do that one. Okay. Let's do that one for 10 minutes and see how we're doing. Okay. Let's stop and dance for 10 minutes, and then we'll do another 5 minutes of whatever that is on our list. Okay. What kind of music do you want to dance? All right. Let's put that on. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so if what you want to do, again, as you know, is interfere with that that relationship between the one who's being beaten and abused and those abusive voices. You've got to insert yourself and be a support to her. Because as long as everybody just bails out and leaves her there, she has no choice but to stay there. So you're the best candidate to go in there and say, all right, well, you might feel like I'm not much help, but
uh-huh.
I'm all we've got. So let's see what we can do here. Okay? Take the contest out of it. You know, do that. Look at what the standards are. Cut them in half, cut them in half, cut them in half again. Do things in five-minute increments. Reward yourself heavily. Okay? Wow, look at that. Folded one item of clothing. All right. This is good. Let's see if we can fold another one. Okay? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right. Your assignment.
Okay.
And keep an eye on your email. Heaven only knows what's going to happen next.
Right, right. Okay. All right.
All
well,
right.
I feel better having kind of aired some of the
absolutely.
All of the thought in my head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why God made Sangha.
Thank God.
Yes. All right. Take care of yourself.
Okay. Right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Amy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my life.
visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Let me give out the phone number here, Sherry. People want to join our conversation today. The number is 888-4-SANGHA. And in numbers, that is 888-472-6442. It gets you to the TalkShoe system, and then you'll need to enter the call ID, which is 15406. And we'd love to talk with people today. Sherry, I have another caller here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George from Pennsylvania.
Michael was right. This is quite a Pennsylvania
yes,
lineup.
I had to stay on the line after I heard that.
Yeah. So how's it going in your part of Pennsylvania?
Well, it's been very interesting. I had a few pieces of content over the last couple of months that have been very troubling to ego. And the first one was I had put together this chanting group that, and we did some chanting and had a small audience and so on, and it seemed to be going along pretty well, and we made some money for the Africa project and so on, and then it just kind of dwindled. People stopped coming, and and we were really promoting it and so on. So that was a great opportunity for conditioning to just really come in and
make a lot of meaning.
A lot of meaning out of that. And then I had last year, about a year ago, I had decided that I was pretty much retired, and I had decided that the way that I was going to deal with the financial situation was by getting involved with the stock market. And anyone who's been following the stock market knows that the stock market is really a real disaster. I thought that I knew what I was doing, and I did not know what I was doing, and ended up losing, quite a bit of money. And the other thing that happened during this period of time is that I seemed to go through this bipolar thing that I've been doing all my life, and every time I come out of that, of course, I think, well, now that's the last time it's ever going to happen. And, I finally figured this out, and it's been, all the work that I've done with meditation, so on and so forth, it's finally paid off. This is great. And, of course, that's just that's more of ego. And of course, it doesn't last. And so that also is another piece of content that the voices had a great opportunity to use, so that I got a pretty severe pounding over the last couple of months, and it's been interesting. The difference this time is that I am definitely less identified than I have been in the past. That's not to say that I don't get completely identified a lot of the time and feel absolutely miserable and in total despair and, don't know whether I can make it to the next minute and that my stomach is churning and, I just feel like I want to die. But, I've been there so many times and I remember this is something you wrote in a book once that really stuck with me. You said something about, I've been depressed and wanted to kill myself so many times, I can't really take it that seriously anymore. And that really stuck with me, and that's what's happening. That's kind of the distance I have on it at this point.
Yeah, that it reminds me of that thing that Joko Beck says about we don't let stuff go, we wear it out.
Yeah.
You know, that idea that we start out and we really think we're going to let go of something. But in reality, it's as you describe, as soon as we have a different experience, then we're, oh, okay, well, this is where I am now. This is what's true. And it's just going back over the same thing over and over and over and over until, we lose our ability to really to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not believable any longer,
which is
a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's also a feeling that you know, somebody is really suffering here. You know, there's somebody that's really, really suffering here. But it's not as personal as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, it's a harsh thing to consider, especially following a statement like that. But the only thing that suffers is ego.
Is ego. Yeah. Yeah.
So ego is really suffering.
Yeah.
But you don't have to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though the sensations are there, the pain is there,
Well, the sensations are there, the pain is there. You know, that's a little different, because the pain being identified as a problem is a result of somebody who has an idea about how something should be, wants this to be different because it should be like that instead. So it all points us back to that illusion of a separate self. Because, if we were just simply life living, again, it's so much easier to see with children and animals. You know, children and animals can be in the most god-awful life circumstances and seem to be, unless there's something right in the moment, they seem unaffected by what's going on with them, because there's nobody to hold this picture of how it should be.
The way things should be, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So the place where we were staying
Ego's idea of how things should be,
The place we were staying in Indola, there were two dogs, and boy, I mean, talk about not a life experience that you would ever want anybody to have. The way dogs are treated, generally speaking, in that part of the world is appalling. But these two dogs, one very healthy and strong, and the other one looked like his back leg, one of his back legs had been run over, and then nobody ever did anything with it. So it just went down sort of to his knee, or what I guess that's his knee in the back, and then it just went off to the right, you know, in this kind of right angle. And so essentially, he has three legs. And, you know, I look at him and go, oh, you know, I just want to take him to the vet and get him fixed. And after I spent a period of time with this dog, it was just so obvious that anything I was thinking about that dog was pure projection. Because he didn't seem to be aware at all that there was anything going on with his body other than it did everything he wanted it to do.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, if we were in that state, we would never stop thinking about what a rotten deal we had. He just went ahead and was a dog.
What victims we are.
Yeah. So without that illusion of a self who is separate from life, then life just is what it is. And when there's pain, you know, we kind of draw back from it and do what we do to take care of, and then go right on. With the illusion of a separate self, there's nothing going on. And we're up there in our heads, you know, worrying about the future and trying to figure out the past. And
And the ego is the feeling of shame, of being depressed and being in despair and so on, that there's a feeling of shame that comes along with that that is part of ego also.
Yes, it is.
That,
yes,
you know,
it is.
It's embarrassing. It's shameful. It's, you know, there's, you know, what will other people think? All of that is.
And I watch
that going on, and that's, you know, just part of the whole, you know.
It can be part of it, but it's not a requirement.
No,
you know that,
not a
right?
requirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's like, again, with those dogs, you know, the one who should feel good about himself is the one with four good legs.
Mm-hmm.
The other one should just be lying over there ashamed and embarrassed and
mm-hmm.
humiliated because he has this infirmity. You know, no.
Yeah.
So, you know, a person experiences what is called, what has a label of depression. Great. You know, somebody else
mm-hmm.
has MS. Somebody else has a heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else
mm-hmm.
has brain
yeah.
tumor. Somebody else has, everybody got something.
Yep. The vibrating wristwatch has been helpful with this. Actually, it stops me, you know, wherever I am with ego or identification or whatever, I stop when the vibration hits, and I pull out a card. I pull out a few cards from my pocket, index cards. Whatever has been helpful from the morning's meditation and listening to open air and so on, which I do every day. And pull that out and read it.
Yep.
And it's just one little thing, but
yep.
but it's sometimes it really works.
It's a very good thing.
Many times it doesn't, but you know, it's always
yep.
somewhat helpful. It's always, you know,
well,
at least a drop,
you know,
in the bucket.
When it doesn't work, what you need to do is continue to read it until it does work.
Mm.
Because, of course, that's one of the techniques that conditioning uses,
mm-hmm.
right? So I realize that I disidentify when I say thank you. Then I say thank you, and the voice comes in and says, well, yep, that didn't really work. Didn't really change.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really changed.
Mm-hmm.
You're just. So then I'm required to just find a comfy spot, sit down, and say thank you until I realize, in fact, it did work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, sir.
All right.
Take good care. Oh, I wanted to ask you before we
yeah.
hang up, who makes the vibrating watch? Might as well do a commercial
well,
for him.
Michael knows all about that. It's Vibralite, Vibralite, and it's a website, vibralite.com.
Vibralite.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, good. We'll all get
and
our vibrating
got,
watches.
It goes off every hour. It vibrates
uh-huh.
every hour. And yeah,
can
I
you
have
set
the Vibralite 2 here, I guess.
Can you set it for more frequently than an hour?
No.
Ah.
At least not the one that I have. And from what I could tell from the website, and Michael might correct me on this, is that they're all like that. I mean, they have a
uh-huh.
lot of other features. The more expensive
uh-huh.
ones have a lot more features. But as far as something going off every, you know, period without having to set it up every day or whatever, it seems like it's just every hour.
Okay.
But
well, now that would be something for you to do in your retirement is invent one that goes off whenever you want it to.
Yeah. Right.
I'll buy one.
Yeah. Me
yeah.
too.
Okay. Very good. Thanks,
yeah.
George.
Thanks for joining us, George.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Good night, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, in my experience with that watch, you can set it to go off pretty regularly.
Ah,
so,
like every 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something?
Yeah, or 2 minutes.
Oh, Vibralite.com.
Vibralite.com.
We got to go.
George could take a look at the manual there, and that would be helpful also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Sherry, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hey.
Okay. Sportsdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Sportsdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Sherry?
Yes?
Hello? Am I on the air here?
You are now on the air, yes.
Oh, okay. I emailed a question to Living Compassion.
Who is this? Can I
This
ask?
Is Ray. Yeah, Ray from Pittsburgh.
Oh, hey, Ray.
How are you?
Good.
I had more of our
Pennsylvania.
I know. This is Western Pennsylvania Day.
Yeah.
I emailed this question to Living Compassion, and they said that maybe I should give you a call at on the weekly radio show. So my question to them was, would one of you kind folks try to answer something that has been bothering me since I started looking at Buddhism as a way of life? How did the Buddha justify his desertion of his family, along with, you know, the noble truths and the prefix? That's one thing that has bothered me, and I wondered if you could help me with
it. It seemed like an un-Buddha-like behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, now I don't know if this is good. Periodically, I like to get out my New Testament and do a little research, and so I'm going to do a little research, and then maybe the next time we talk, we can have a conversation about what Jesus said about this, because you know he advocated the same thing, basically.
Okay.
And I think that this is what it's based in. Now, and one other thing, which I'm sure you know since you're a student of Buddhism, all of the members of the Buddhist family eventually came to him and I don't know what studied with him. There's no way to really talk about it, but looked to him as their teacher, accepted him as their teacher. And the thing about it is, I think that there's a realization that any particular incarnation is exactly that. That it's really more a Judeo-Christian view, that we start out and we have this life, and we get to the end of it, and that's it. And how we did is how we did, and that's sort of, you know, you're going to be judged. There's going to be a decision made based on that. In Eastern philosophy, there is more an understanding that any particular incarnation is one of many incarnations, that the point of life is to transcend the beliefs and assumptions, the identifications, the egocentric karmic conditioning, the illusion of a separate self that make us believe this artificial, this illusory world is real. And that is, to me, what the Buddha was doing. When he realized that it was possible to end suffering, to awaken and end suffering, he was compelled to do that because it was his...
Yeah, we are going to take a quick break.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know if you can hear me, but something's happening with the phone here.
Yes, we're going to wait till Sherry comes back on the line, and we're going to take a quick break here. I'll keep you on the line here.
Okay, fine.
When Sherry's back on, we'll continue.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, are you there? Sherry, are you back?
Michael.
Yes.
I was talking away so enthusiastically and then realized that it had gotten very, very quiet.
Yes.
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 Is Ray still with us?
Ray is still with us.
Yes.
Okay. So had I left off my launch where the Buddha had realized that it's possible to end suffering?
Okay. But I guess I'm not following the point as far as the precept of not harming, you know, don't harm others and the precept type of thing that, to me, in my thoughts of desertion of a family, that would be, you know, harming others. But what you're saying is maybe I'm taking a single incident, putting it in my mind, whereas I'm not looking at the overall.
Yes, because if there's a realization that what's going on is the living out of karma, then to choose to live out karma rather than make a choice that takes us away from karma,
okay,
would be the greater harm.
Okay. Now I follow you a little bit. I didn't before, but
yeah. And see, I think that's why it's such an important part of his story that all of his family members came back and accepted him as a teacher. So it's like somebody needed to do this. And so the person who was, you could almost say the sacrifice for the family was him. So he moved into that role in the same way that Jesus moved into that role and encouraged people to say, when you see what is truly important, what's truly possible in a lifetime, you are obligated to make that choice.
Okay, so the ending of suffering and going, trying to find those truths to end suffering was greater than, say, the suffering of leaving his family?
Yes. Well, and of course, you know, there's nothing to say that there was suffering in
That's
leaving.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean,
yeah.
There was nothing to say his wife wasn't waving to
Could
him.
Couldn't wait for him to get out of there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we get that's not the case. But we've
right.
all been in enough relationships to know that leaving is not inherent suffering and staying is not inherent bliss.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the thing about it, Ray, to me, there's just one other point that I want to make. And that is that in life, it's not what happens. It's how it happens. So sometimes it can be more compassionate to leave compassionately than to stay with a lack of compassion.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to think all this through. But there's a lot here, but that hits pretty good. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Well, look at it, and then we can continue the conversation.
Fine.
Because there's so much to it. You know, there. The idea, first of all, now, I don't believe that we can hurt another person.
That they do it to, yeah. And I'm assuming a lot here, I guess, is what I'm coming to realize as we're talking. And they have a lot of assumptions.
Well, we
with
do.
Relationships, based on my relationships, I think, you know, in the pain and suffering and all that, and I'm just drawing the conclusion that everybody does with the same thing. So yes, you've given me a lot to think about here.
Good. All right.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
and
well, thanks for calling.
We'll talk again. Thanks.
Checking
Bye-bye.
In again. Yeah. Good night.
All right. Good night now.
Thanks for joining us, Ray. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have one more caller here, and we have about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, we'll find out what the subject is and then do our standard invitation to return.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Isabel calling from California.
Hi, Isabel.
Hi. I'm calling because I think I just need some support. I'm doing my second month in a row of the Compassionate Self-Discipline Retreat.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm on day 5, and it's sort of like this month I've already sort of done the things that I wasn't going to do during the month. And I guess
So you had ideas that it would go this way or that way. I'm not going to smoke any cigarettes this month, and you've already smoked 3 packs a day.
Exactly,
that,
like that.
That kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I
good.
Think it just well, that's the part I'm not at yet, is that it's good.
Well, see, you've gotten it out of the way.
Okay.
So you don't have to have that hanging over your head. Will I? Won't I? Am I going to, you know, am I going to meet the standard? Am I going to do it perfectly? The answer is no.
Uh-huh.
I sense that's not good news for you.
Well, I think what I'm struggling with is the line between making a change, like, because it's the right thing to do, but it's also because it's a healthy change that I want to make. But it's like I'm struggling with finding that line where it's like I don't have to beat myself up in order to...
Well, I know. No, wait, Isabel, I can help you find that line, okay?
Okay.
You never have to beat yourself up.
Uh-huh.
Ever. Doesn't matter what you do. If you have ice cream for breakfast, chocolate cake for lunch, and root beer floats for dinner every night for the next month, it still doesn't warrant a beating.
Mm. I'm coming to that.
Good.
I think it's like I feel like I need guidance, and it's what I'm seem to be coming to is that to look to my heart for that instead
mm-hmm.
of some voice in my head.
Yes. And you know, if you feel like you're out there on your own and you know, which we all are, one of the things that you – do you have like a sister or a best friend or a mother who really loves you or any people like that?
I have a really supportive partner.
Okay. So could you say to your really supportive partner, is this something that I should beat myself over?
Okay.
Yeah? And as long as your partner says, no, don't do that, then don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, because you know nobody who really loves you is going to say, "Oh yeah, you've crossed the line, girl. You really need to be beaten." Now the person might say, "You know, I think you need to get more support. I think you're not listening to your heart here. I think that these are not good choices for you." So people who love you might say things like that, but never, yes, you deserve to be beaten.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it truly, until that piece of it is out of the equation, there really isn't a more important thing to be focused on. First, stop the beatings. If you do that retreat over and over and over, month after month after month, and the only thing you ever focus on is making sure that nobody ever gets a beating, you will have done a grand and glorious thing.
So even regardless of my quote-unquote behavior or whatever
does not matter.
No,
does not matter. What we're going for is compassion no matter what. It does not matter.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're going for.
Okay?
So you try that one on and then give me a call back and let me know what you see.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Very
okay,
good.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank
okay,
you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Isabel. You've been listening to another great show of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll do
Talk
it again.
To you soon.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.